This is the start of the third and final tape of the July 26, 1986 interview with Geraldine Marjoram and John Gavagan Jr. The interviewer is David Taylor.
Cordial. And I tell you someone else I saw at Beaches Hospital was Hugh O'Brien.
Really?
Yeah, he was getting one of those high-class vitamin shots.
Mm-hmm.
And this
B12.
Yeah, this colored girl, my daughter was in the hospital at that time, and she came running in there, and she was bent over. She says, "Kim, Susan, in the whatever room, the emergency room."
Yeah.
Says, "Hugh O'Brien." And, man, I went hightailing it back there, and I waited for him to come out, and I shook hands with him, and he was very cordial. And I said, "Would you please come up here and say hello to my daughter?" I said, "She can't come down here." He says, "What's wrong with her?" I said, "She got run over by a tractor." Well, she did. Her husband did it.
Mm.
But anyhow, and her pelvis was broken. But he did. He went down there to see her, and then he stopped to see another little girl right next door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did anybody tell you about John King's haunted house over there?
I brought
him. I just saw that article, and
well, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I'm giving
him
that article.
A lot of people, excuse me, in Mayport that will try to say, "Yeah, we went over to John." When we were kids and growing up, the thing was to go over John King. It was kind of a spooky house. Anyhow, he's a merchant marine. He didn't spend a lot of time there. We'd play hide and go seek or something like that, and there was a number of times we saw things come out that shouldn't. I mean, I remember a black guy coming out in a red and white striped pirate shirt one time when Frankie Harrell was up there and he jumped off the second story. It scared him so bad. Now, I don't know whether it was somebody that came in on a boat that went in to stay. I don't know. But there was a lot of weird things. My Aunt Doris going over there one time to return some kind of a garden tool and a boy saying, "Go away, go away." Remember her telling
yes,
that story? And boy,
yes.
she went. But his sister, Clara King, was up there one time and was bathing this little girl, Mary Fuller was her name, in the bathtub.
Her granddaughter.
And I remember Mary Fuller said, "Granny," said, "there goes that nigger again by that door." And that she snatched her out of that tub and boom, she was
that
gone.
That in the half. Clara was sitting on the john one time, really and truly, and these hands came down the wall and Clara ran out of with her britches down.
Yeah,
I kid you not.
I'll tell you another.
They believed it. I
yeah.
didn't.
Anyhow, this spook stories kind of started like that about the house. It was no big deal. Nobody in Jacksonville's ever heard of John King's.
Mm-hmm.
And I started the whole show, believe me. When I was a young boy and they first started letting me use in the car, my day,
exactly.
I didn't have the money to go buy, go to a movie and buy hamburgers and all like that. My deal was I would go buy me a six-pack of beer, get somebody to buy me a six-pack, and this is when I'm 16, 17 years old, and I'd go to John King's because he was the only adult that I could sit in front of and drink beer, you know, without getting in trouble or whatever.
Right, right.
So I started taking, whenever I would ask a girl out, I would always double date with someone. We would take the girls over there. Well, needless to say, a date was a date, and there was nothing, you know, they would date someone else. And then these girls got such a good rapport, and he was such a nice man, telling his stories and all about the different things that happened. They started bringing people. And before long, it was like a domino-type thing, mm-hmm. you know, just everybody started coming over. It really kind of burnt me up, because I started taking these beach guys. You know, I was from Mayport, and there was the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to a movie theater when I was a little boy, and guys from the beach would go tell the usher something smelled like fish up there. It'd be the boys from Mayport trying to watch a movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
we
had an attitude about
sure,
the beach
sure.
guys and
yep.
the Mayport guys.
Well, the Gavagans had it good, though, Johnny. You know that.
But anyhow, I...
Some of the others didn't.
You know, started making new friends other than the little town of Mayport, and I would ask them to come home and spend the night or something. They were too scared. They'd get beat up on the school bus and never, they'd leave, you know, with their pajamas and everything and never come home with me. The Mayport boys were a rough bunch, believe me. But
yeah.
I started taking people over to John King's, and like I say, when I started, we moved to the beach after a while, and the girls would get such a good rapport with John King that they, when they went out with some other guy, the girl would take the guy and say, "Hey, I got a great idea. Let's go to Johnny." Well, I would go by there with a date, and John, being the nice man that he was and fair man like, "Hey, he's known me all my life, but I've already got company, Johnny. Come back in about an hour, you know, after my company's left," because there'd be four cars there. He'd put them in this room, that room, and this room.
And they'd
go
from
room to room talking to him, telling him about the old house and all. But so anyhow, It was just ghost stories. Not that much was seen or anything other than a sister.
He'd make you believe him.
Yeah, a few people in Mayport had supposedly seen some
things. I brought him a newspaper about it, John.
I started shimmying. I would go down the street and park my car and tell the people I'll be back in a minute. And I'd go to the back of the house, this two-story home with a porch, wooden porch all the way around it, with banisters and carved wood poles. Well, you've seen the house over there. Okay. I'd shimmy up one of those poles and go through the back door and put an overcoat over the top of my head like this and stand at the stairwell and go, ooh! And they'd run up and they'd look up there and see this overcoat with no head on it, and they would just tear the door down getting out of there. So I'd throw the coat down, run outside, jump in my car. I'd come out and say, John, can I come in there? He said, yeah, everybody just took off on me. Come on in. You know? So I would run everybody off so I could take my friends in there. So I'm sure that's where a lot of this stuff got started, see? It was because of me doing that. But I remember the only time that, gosh, I never will forget it. I was sitting in a reclining-like chair. There was a door like this and another one over here with a stairwell in the hallway that went up. And it was the first time anything like this ever happened. I was with Jerry Ridenback, and he had a girl he married, Peggy Pritchard, and I had her sister. No, I was with Peggy Pritchard. He was with Pat Pritchard. But anyhow, the girl was sitting on the step here, and I remember I'd just been over to pull a beer out or a pop top, and she screamed. And when she screamed, I looked up, and I saw something go by that first door right here.
Yeah.
And as it went down the hallway, there was that second door, and I saw a woman go by, and she had on like a square back dress, like a piece of cardboard for a collar or something that came up high, you know?
Yeah.
And down with blonde hair on top of her head, and there was no body movement at all. It was like she was on roller skates and somebody had pushed her because she went, ooh. I mean, just, and I, instead of scaring me, I wanted to see what it was, and I took off after it, and the back door was still laid open where somebody had went out of it. And that night, I never will forget, I asked John King. I said, John, I said, I've been coming over here for years now. I said, this is the first time I've ever seen anything. I said, do you have something rigged up here? I said, you're starting to get so many people now and all. I said, you have something rigged or somebody coming by here? He said, Johnny, he said, if I had something rigged, he said, I'd charge admission because people would see something every time they came. I never forget that he told me that. But
They had people from Duke University that went and tested that.
Well, yeah, he said the people from Duke, parapsychologists.
Yeah, but Gloria King, you know Gloria King Wilson, John's niece, said she'd like to have the whole business cleared up. She felt the Duke report, a serious and objective study, would put to rest all the nonsense about her grandparents' home. Well, John King made it come true for so many kids. He would have me all up there on Christmas Eve.
It's just like the time that Frank Doggett, that was the local principal at this high school for years and years and years, went over there with a couple of these guys from Duke University.
Yeah.
John left the house, went over to what was then, well, I don't think it was Parnell's. It may have been Parnell's, or it may have been changed to Parsons. I don't know. And got some shrimp dinners to go. But when they come back, the two guys said, you know, your guy upstairs said that he would talk to you in the morning. And John started laughing. You know, he said, well, he said, there hadn't been anybody in this house but me for the past 20 years. I don't know who you're talking about. And these guys just flipped. They went upstairs, and, I mean, nothing untouched. Beds made, no one around but a little guy with a beard and a red jacket, you know, a little Spanish-looking guy came down. A friend of mine, Jerry Ridenback, was sitting at the stairwell one night, and one of the doors up there, he had 16 penny nails through the door shut, and Jerry was up there one night, and that door went opened up, and Jerry tore the man's screen door off its hinges, getting out of there.
I didn't believe half they told about it, but I can tell you one thing: if I'd been offered $1,000 to spend the night there alone, I wouldn't have. No way. No, sirree, Bob. I would not hire.
But supposedly, there again, it is situated on. This is supposed to be fact. I don't know. That it is on a Spanish cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was told. Yeah.
Spanish cemetery. Yeah.
And how true it was. John never married. He was a bachelor.
Yeah.
But he was a gentleman. But
yeah, he was.
But he could spin his tails, believe you me.
You said he was a merchant seaman?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. His father was a captain, granddaughter of Captain William Joseph King, a native of Delaware who came into Mayport on a schooner and decided to stay to become a bar pilot. That's what your grandmother's father was, Mr.
Bar
Gordon.
Bar pilot Gordon, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Bob Parker is right now. In fact, president of the Bar Pilots Association here in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. They're still over there. Sue Parker.
This Gloria King Wilson, she lives close to me now. But this is interesting, and you can certainly make copies or whatever.
Great, okay.
And you can either bring it to me or to John, since you know where John lives.
Do people ever tell stories like that about other places in Mayport, like the lighthouse, for example?
Joe, where's your picture of the lighthouse I got for you? Show him that picture.
Was that manned by anyone when you moved over there to Mayport? Or was that automatic or even used then?
No, it was not used when I went there. It was not used. As a matter of fact, now that's another thing.
Yeah.
I got him that. That was painted by a man. He's not an artist. As a matter of fact, he's a mechanic.
Good job.
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. But that lighthouse was not in effect when I was there. They had, like I say, that other lighthouse on the beach, they had a beacon there that was on the Navy base now. Well, then they built that other Coast Guard station up there. They're manned by the Coast Guard. But John's father, at one time when shrimping was real bad, he went to work for B.B. McCormick, who made the runways out at Mayport Navy Base. And I'll never forget one day it rained and they couldn't work. Mm-hmm. And your father came home and somebody told him, said the mullet are running, and he went down and he made more in a few minutes of catching mullet than he made in a whole week's pay.
Yeah, well, those little jetties are, when you first come into Mayport around that curve, there's beach fishermen that actually live there. They will actually stay there, and so no one will get their spot.
Right.
And when the mullet come through, you know, you just would not believe. I've seen them catch as much as 70,000 pounds where they had to bring dump trucks to get them out of the net and throw up in them to take to market. Now, there's other times when, like Billy Bensel, the guy that's the greatest liar in the world, he told me he remembered when there wasn't any mullet.
Yeah.
He said that there was a big drought about fishing, and the beach fishermen stayed there all winter and nothing whatsoever. They'd actually get in their boats and go looking. And he said that they saw a fire one night on the very far end of the little jetties, and they pulled in there to see maybe if they were catching something. Mm-hmm. He said there's two porpoises up there roasting a possum. That's how bad the fishing was.
So, you know there are two books out I wish you could get a hold of. Ed Smith wrote one called Them Good Old Days. And then poor Ms. Stark that owned, as a matter of fact, she owned all the property just about where the Navy base is now. She had a beautiful home there. And I forget what the name of hers. I had copies, but I don't know what I did.
You do? Book, yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you, she was from England, of course. But I know they told me this before I went there, that at Christmas time, she had gifts for all the children in Mayport. They had a huge Christmas tree outside for those children, barring weather. And she gave each one of them a toy and a sweater or something to wear. Usually a sweater for the boys, maybe for the girls too, but that was told to me. But then the Mrs. Stark I knew, she had snow white hair and wore it back here with a red ribbon in it. And she would go to all the grocery stores and get their stale bread. And what did she have to feed? Was it goats?
Goats. She had ducks. She had bats. She fed all kinds of stuff. Plus, she used to have a Girl Scout troop that would patrol the beaches on horseback
for the
German submarines that were out here.
During World War One.
I think she, it was a big kado that they were a big part in protecting our coast from here to St. Augustine.
Your Aunt Doris, I think she went to one meeting of it, and that was it for her.
No, her estate was over where the base is now in that area?
No, her estate...
Johnny the First.
...was where the Mayport Junior High is right now in all that area.
Oh, yeah.
It's where Coquina Pit and all like that.
Yeah, but she lived on the base where the Officers Club used to be. It's not there now. It's close to the...
I don't remember any of that. Now, you would know better.
I do. That's when the government stepped in, and as a matter of fact,
they took a bunch
they
of
did. Problems. They did not pay her fairly and squarely. I said they can... I don't even want to get into the federal government. I'm a Democrat, and I'll never change. Mr. Gavigan taught me to be a Democrat, and I will never change my feelings. I just can't. Do you want any of this stuff to keep, to look at?
I think we'll stop this now because I've taken an awful lot of your time.
This is the end of the July 26, 1986 interview with Geraldine Marjoram and her son, John Gavagan Jr. The interview was conducted by David Taylor in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project. End of tape, end of interview.